The Workforce Development Finance Committee will come to order. We don't have any minutes this week, so we'll review them next week. Our first bill this morning is House File 1097. I will move that House File 1097 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Welcome to the committee, Representative Hussein. Please explain your bill and introduce your testifiers.
Thank you very much. Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee, for considering this important equity appropriation request for Ojama Place. Ojama Place was founded in 2009 when St. Paul African American Leadership responded to significant gap for young black men living the lowest cost in a social economic spectrum by working collectively with other nonprofit organizations across the state. Ojama Place serves primarily African American men age 18 to 30 from Twin Cities and the seven county metro area. When kids get enrolled with no cost, and they give them a mentorship program and helping them to provide the skills that they need. And this year, I do have the CEO, Michael Bolton, who's going to be testifying on behalf of this great organization that has been exist for many years and helping for black kids in St. Paul and the seven other metro counties.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Committee Chair Song, my name is Michael Belton, and I want to thank you, as well as Representative Hussein and the members of the committee, for allowing me this opportunity to update you all on Ojama Place. I am also the interim and outgoing CEO of Ojama Place. The board of directors of our organization selected a new CEO. His name is Christopher Crutchfield, and he will be starting his tenure in about a month or so. We are asking for an appropriation in the amount of $1.5 million a year for 2 years, a total of $3 million to go to Ojama Place for building capacity to serve more men by enhancing and expanding mental and chemical health services, housing expansion, job training, employment preparation, internships, education, vocation training, and organizational capacity building to continue serving African American young men ages 18 to 80, most of whom have been formerly involved in criminal justice systems. The theory of transformation, TOT, which is on the backside of your one-sheeter, is Ojama Place's blueprint to success in helping predominantly African-American men transform their lives. Through participation in the theory of transformation, participants have access to wraparound services in the following areas: housing, education, employment training and development, health and wellness, criminal justice advocacy, and culture, which is woven throughout all of our program pillars. Ojama Place maintains a recidivism rate of just 4 to 6%, compared to the national average of 41% and Minnesota's 25%. While reducing recidivism is good, investing in the success of Ojama men is even better. Maintaining job stability requires stable housing. We currently house 37 Ojama men at three scattered housing sites, and we are at capacity. Providing and maintaining housing is the costliest service provided by Ojama Place. Correspondingly, it happens to be the one that is most in demand. 50% of Ojama men are working homeless when they enroll. Ojama Place provides nearly 40 free transformation services to men enrolled in the theory of transformation. We are asking for this increase in our grant to support even more men who are chronically homeless, jobless, addicted, and who suffer trauma-related illnesses from long-term life on the streets. When I think about Ojama Place and just the name Ojama, which is Swahili for cooperative economics, I think that underlying that principle is a deeper principle, and that is the interconnectedness of all of us. And I say that because we firmly believe at Ujamaa Place that an investment, particularly an increased investment, in Ujamaa men is an investment in the people of this great state. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Bilton. Representative Hussein, do you have any other testifiers?
Yes, I do have. I would like to call Monique Linder.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Good morning. My name is Monique Linder. And thank you to Chair Zong and Representative Hussein and members of the committee. I serve Ujamaa Place in the role of data analyst and media consultant. The Living Wage Initiative continues. Meanwhile, the organization continues to build employment partnerships as well as advocate on behalf of participants in all marginalized communities for equitable wages and the elimination of discriminatory hiring and employment practices. Further, the organization will continue to assist its justice involved participants with record expungement and restoration of their civil rights with the goal of eliminating all involvement with the criminal justice system. The hourly wage of participants, the average wage, decreased in 2022 to $16.24, and that was in Q4 of 2022, from $20.48 in Q3 of 2022 and $21.75 in Q2. So we've had recently in 2022 a decrease in the hourly wage, which is a critical data metric that we track. Notably in Q4, there were three participants who secured permanent living wage positions, and five participated in the job training stipend program. The stipend program supplements the income of participants while providing valuable employment training and development in partnerships with corporations. No matter their education or skill level, participants earn a living wage from day one on the job. This living wage initiative is critical to participants meeting basic needs. The jobs and economic growth is a critical performance metric, and in the words of Father Greg Boyle of Homeboy Industry, nothing stops a bullet like a job. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Linder. I see that you have another testifier, Representative Hussein, Joseph Cole.
Yes.
Yeah, Joseph Cole.
Joseph. Thank you. Mr. Cole, please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Good morning. My name is Joseph Cole. I'm a Ujamaa man. And thank you, House Chair, Chair Zhang and Representative Hussein, for allowing me to share my theory of transformation story with you. I enrolled in the theory of transformation about a little over a year ago. I actually was recovering from surgery, and I actually fell prey to a housing scam. So I ended up looking for housing at Ujamaa Place, and they were able to fast-track me into their housing because they knew how urgent my situation was. And now I currently am the residential assistant at one of the housing sites in St. Paul. Beautiful 15-bedroom house. I currently stay there with about 13 or 14 other of my Ujamaa brothers. At the house, we also have a classroom space where Monique can come in and train us with media tools, and where our coaches come in and give us one-to-one mentorship. We also have all types of scheduled classes at Ujamaa Place, like financial literacy, career IQ. Every Thursday, we attend Theory of Transformation Men's Group. And we also arguably are served four-star meals every day, Monday through Thursday, for free. Ujamaa Place is really just a brotherhood that has helped me evolve spiritually, economically, and has raised me into the person that my parents have always wanted me to be. Currently, I work 3 living wage jobs to help get 40 hours a week. At Ujamaa Place, I also take advantage of every opportunity they give me, as I'm currently working towards my own independent housing by August. I just want to thank you guys for your time, and we welcome any questions that you have.
Thank you, Mr. Cole, for your sharing your story with us today. Any discussion to the bill? Representative Zelenskar and then Baker.
No.
You have the floor.
Oh.
Zelenskar.
Harder.
Oh, harder.
Sorry, not.
Sorry. I'm sorry. My vision is not good today.
She's trouble.
Thank you, Chair John.
Representative Harder.
Thank you, Chair John. Thank you. The question that I have, I'm just looking at the funds that were received last year for this particular program. And can you tell me, with the additional funds, what exactly will you be doing that? Are you looking at increasing your housing for more people, more staff, programs? Can you please explain how that money will be used?
I'd like to call Mr. Belton back to the stand.
Mr. Belton.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Harder. So I don't have exact figures and exact numbers for you. I do know that a majority of the funds will go to two areas, primary areas. One is going to be housing. As I mentioned in my testimony, that housing is our most costly and most high demand service that we provide at Ujamaa Place. And so our goal is to expand the housing, but also to do something a little different, and that is our vision is to own some of the Ujamaa Place housing so that we're no longer supporting others, but supporting our own community and our own men in where they live and where they learn and where they transform. So that's a big one. Another big one is the employment, working on employment, expanding our employment opportunities and supports. It's not just a matter of providing jobs for these men. It is a matter of providing stable jobs that are living wage and also supporting them once they've secured a job so that they can stay on in the workplace. So those are the two big areas, but we also have to build out our infrastructure, our organizational infrastructure, to support the expanded services that we're looking for.
Representative Harder.
Thank you, Chair Zhang. I have one more question. So with the number of people that are coming through your services, is there a timeline to help, or do you have people that succeed, you know, go through your program and they gain employment or whatever that they are looking for? Do you have people that eventually might come back for more services? How does that work?
Mr. Belton.
Thank you. Yes, we have people who come back, and we have a saying at Ujamaa Place, once an Ujamaa man, always an Ujamaa man. But we have some who, many men who graduate and move on. We have our age of 18 to 30, but when you're working with human beings, you have to be flexible. So some of the men we work with are a little older than 30. Some of the men we work with are younger and get it and are able to move on to a successful life. I hope I answered your question. Thank
you. Representative Harder. Representative Weens.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Rep. Hussein and Mr. Belton. Just kind of following up, I think, a little bit on what Representative Harder asked, I'm looking at the handout. On the back of our handout, we have the Ujamaa Place Forward Plan 2023, and I think that's what you're describing, Mr. Belton. It's a, 20,000 square foot location that you intend to own. So I'm assuming part of what this appropriation would go to is towards buying the property and building out the plan. And how many of you Ujamaa men would be staying in that that location?
Mr. Belton.
Thank you. I don't have exact numbers. And so, but we envision in the conversations I've had so far as interim CEO has been that a fairly large quantity of Ujamaa men would be able to be housed in the building that was envisioned a few years ago. As we all know, plans change, and certainly one of the drivers is having a sufficient financial base in order to build out or purchase a building large enough to serve our administrative offices, as well as, I think, and more importantly, housing and residence for the men. But I can't give you an exact number, but I would say there is probably, I don't know, more than 30 of our men. But we can follow up with you later.
Representative Weems.
Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Belton. I'm very interested to see how this project grows. Just with this appropriation, it's a large appropriation, and I think we're expecting great things from Ujamaa Place with this. You've served 30 Ujamaa men so far, and I imagine this will more than double possibly with the appropriation and what you can do. And so I am also very curious, and I'd love to visit and then try some of that four-star meals that Mr. Cole mentioned. So thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Okay, well, Representative Hussein, please make sure that you follow up with Representative Weems with the data, and any final comments from you?
Yeah, I'll follow up with them both and provide that data information that has been requested.
Okay. Closing comments?
Yes. I mean, many of my friends grew up in Ujamaa Place, and they were very successful. Some of them are working in the county commissioner's office. Some of them are becoming lawyers. Some of them are becoming doctors. Some of them are becoming police officers. Some of them are working with politicians. So Ujamaa Place has been creating money, our youth, and organizing and helping for our community. So I'm very passionate about this. And we've seen the record, and they have a good track record for helping the youth and elders. And if you don't have it, someone that looks like you and not helping you and not mentoring you, usually 99% of our kids are not doing well. So Ujamaa being there for those young and elders and helping the community. Thank you for having me here, and I'll follow up with Representative for the data that you request. Thank you.
All right, I'll renew my motion. The House File 1097 be later will pass with conclusion. Thanks much.
Thank you.
All right, next on the agenda, we're going to hear House File 784. Chair Noor. And I'll move that House File 784 be re-referred to the General Register. There is an author's amendment, which is a DE1. So, Chair Noor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to, good morning, Mr. Chair and members. If we can adopt the DE1.
All those in favor of adopting the DE1, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. The amendment is adopted. To your bill, Chair Noor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. It's good to be back in the workforce and discuss this bill. It's been a while coming back here. So, Mr. Chair and members, this is something that we have contemplated, something that we have discussed. To start with, we've been talking about the days that appeal process is done. Whether you're an employer or a worker, that we give you enough time that you can appeal the process. Right now, as we stand, whether you have got a good cause or for any reason, whether you're an employer or the worker, you don't have the time frame to appeal that process. So we're making it sure that we can provide 60 days that you can appeal, whether you're an employer or a worker, so that you do have enough time. Let's say you're sick in the hospital and you didn't get your mail and so many other things, you will miss that window of 20 days. So this bill makes sure that there's enough time for the employers and also the workers to react. Members, on the other side, I think this bill, what it does is many people who are recipients of unemployment who are laid off on no fault of their own, and then they end up being burdened with, you know, criminal penalties. I'll give you an example. If someone forgot to put the gross amount, instead they put the net amount on their check, which happens to most of us, they will be penalized under the current law. So what we're doing here is, if there's no intentionality, that you did not commit misrepresentation because you didn't intend to do that, you should never be criminalized under the unemployment system that we have. You know, when we're trying to provide the services to those who need the most because they don't have any other income, and then we burden them with penalties. I'll give you an example. In the state of Minnesota, we're charging 40%, 40% penalty if you receive additional overpayment in the unemployment system. Most of the states, even surrounding us, according to the federal, they allow us up to 15%. We should never be charging someone who unintentionally, or whatever circumstances may happen, 40% penalty on what they receive. Likewise, Mr. Chair and members, we charge them interest on top of that. I think most of the states surrounding us, they don't charge anything. I believe it's 12%. So what this bill does is removes the interest, keeps the maximum allowable under the federal rules, the 15% penalty, in case you receive an overpayment. Mr. Chair and members, I'm more passionate about making sure that any Minnesotan who lost their job due to no fault of their own can continue to receive this great safety net that we have in the state of Minnesota. This bill is overdue, and I will ask my testifier to go over some of the provisions in the bill.
Welcome to committee. Please identify yourself for the record. Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jessica Webster. I'm a staff attorney with Legal Aid. I've worked in unemployment insurance for about 16 years, and during that time, I've also served on DEED's external stakeholder group of sorts called the Unemployment Insurance Advisory Council. So for many years, Legal Aid has worked alongside Representative Knorr and advocated to ensure that unemployment insurance is accessible to all workers. And Legal Aid still sees firsthand how some workers, typically those concentrated in low-wage industries, have barriers to accessing UI. Those workers are disproportionately women, people of color, low-income parents, victims of violence, people who speak English as a second language, Minnesotans experiencing homelessness, and adults working through chronic illness and disability. So DEED and Legal Aid would tell you the reasons for the barriers are complicated, and this bill does not address all of them. However, this bill, as Representative Knorr said, Chair Knorr, I apologize, does make three critically important reforms. One, that extra time to appeal, and it's for employers and employees, so it goes from 20 to 60 days. Two, it clarifies that misrepresentation is not an unintentional mistake. So when someone doesn't understand the difference between gross and net income, when they don't understand that as a caretaker of an apartment building, their reduction in rent counts as income, when they accidentally make a mistake and they have multiple jobs, multiple shifts, multiple hours, they don't have an employment dashboard that probably many of the folks in this room have to cobble together the paperwork, unintentional mistake is not misrepresentation. So this bill makes that clear. And then the third thing, when people do make mistakes, if they miss the 60-day, if they make a mistake or use poor judgment when they're reporting, we're not going to create a debtor's prison for folks to repay and to have these debts. So what it does is it reduces that 40% penalty to 15%, like most other states. It gets rid of interest. It cancels the debt after 6 years instead of after 10 years, like many other states, and like as is a common credit practice. And it also, Minnesota right now is the only state in the nation that does not let people offset future unemployment insurance benefits to repay that old debt. We make people permanently blanket ineligible to receive unemployment insurance until they repay that old debt. So this offset would be something that it's totally unique to Minnesota right now, and it would be bringing us in line with other states. So what this bill doesn't do, we don't touch revenue or DEED's tools to collect overpayments. If you have an overpayment, deed can still use garnishment, revenue recapture. We really don't touch the criminal or the fraud statute here. So if there is an egregious fraud on the unemployment insurance system, we didn't touch 268.182 that talks about maybe referring something for criminal prosecution. I don't think those are typically seen in the system, but if there was something very troubling to deed, they still have that tool at their disposal. So I'll sum up. I know there's a lot of bills on the calendar today, so I don't want to spend too much time testifying further, but we have a number of examples of people who have few thousand-dollar overpayments that have turned into $11,000, $15,000, and it's really burdensome and unnecessary. So thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Discussion. Representative Baker.
Mr. Chair and Representative Knorr, thank you for this bill. I have tried to help a few of my own employees that have gotten stuck in that donut where they did make a bad choice, and it got a little bit out of control. It was turned into a probably $2,000-$3,000 that they were overpaid with the unemployment fund, and with the penalty and the interest, I tried to help him pay it off and be the banker, if you would, just so he could pay me and not do the garnishment thing, and it was such a burden. So this is long overdue. I'm glad we're bringing some common sense to this. So what I hear it, and I don't know who wants to answer this, but does it give deed the ability to make those exceptions then, to look at the unintentional consequences? I still don't want to give people free passes if they knowingly said, I just love taking this money. And probably the part of it is people get behind, and when this money is coming in the mail and maybe they're back to work for an extra week or two, it's hard to turn it off. It's a real conflict of interest, to be honest with you. But I just want to make sure that the folks at Deed that have to manage this do now have the right tools to be able to kind of bring some sensibility to this so our employees can move on and not be just completely riddled with penalties. So appreciate the bill, but if there's an answer to that, that'd be great. Thanks.
Chair Knorr.
Mr. Chair, Representative Beck, I think this will be a good question for Deed because they're the ones who run day-to-day operations. I don't know if anyone from Deed wants to weigh on that question, or maybe we can follow up with them. I'm sure you've been doing a great work there.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Dariel Dannon, and I am the Government Relations Director at the Department of Employment and Economic Development. And I was chatting with your staff, so I did not hear the question.
Representative Baker.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Dannon, thanks for stepping in. I guess as an employer, I just mentioned, as I had talked to Deed a number of years ago about these horrific penalties that were there, and they were locked in statute. You couldn't really do much about it. Does this language, Ms. Dannon, help you do what we want to do where they have the ability to either make decisions and just look at the case, make those kind of decisions without kind of falling behind statute rules and laws that we just can't give them that flexibility? Is this the language you're looking for to solve this problem?
Ms. Cannon.
Representative Baker, I appreciate the question. So I think as a broader statement, the department continues to have some concerns about this bill. This bill is quite broad. It does quite a few different things. Does this bill allow the department the discretion? I think I'm going to restate maybe what you're asking, and we'll check and see if that's appropriate. Does this bill give the department the discretion to impose penalties only when it's appropriate? Is that what you're asking, Representative Baker?
Representative Baker.
Yes.
Ms. Dannon.
Okay. So, Representative Baker, the department does have discretion under the existing law, and we do have hearings with folks. So it is a pretty common happenstance that if we determine that folks perhaps were subject to identity theft, they were not mentally competent to make decisions, they had a family member doing things for them, we have a hearing on that, and we do have the latitude under the current law to not impose penalties when that's the case.
Representative Baker.
That's good. Thank you very much. I look forward to this moving forward.
Chair Nora.
Mr. Chair and members, I think this is in subdivision 6, page 12, line 22, when we're talking about the overpayment. The commissioner may not compromise the amount of any overpaid unemployment benefits, including penalties and interest. So, yes, we allow the commissioner not to compromise any process, you know, in terms of leeway or anything else. So this is already in subdivision 6. I think that was the question you may have asked.
Further discussion. Representative Harder.
Thank you, Chair Zong and Representative Nor. My question relates to, I think I need clarification on the bill. So do you know how many, if this is adopted, the people that are currently in repayment or whatever, does this affect them? I'm just having a little trouble with the bill. I'm not so sure that if people have debt to pay, they should pay it willingly. But I'm just curious, the people that are already in these payment plans or whatever that you, however you call it, does this affect them or is this going forward?
Ms. Webster.
Mr. Chair, Representative Harder, I think that's a good question, and this is not retroactive relief for folks as written, and that's something else the legislators have raised for us, that we should maybe consider dropping that 40% and running interest that's been running on folks so that other people can benefit from to repay their debts this way. So I think that's something we could talk about.
Representative Hutter.
Thank you.
Closing comments, Chair Nor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I hear the department's concern, but I think this has been an ongoing issue. Quite frankly, it's unfair to many folks who lost their job due to no fault of their own. This is not fair to the whole system because we understand this issue. We have discussed it many times. And I want to make sure that we, you know, we give people the chance. Mistakes are made. We need the correction to be fair. And quite frankly, 40% is unfair. Quite frankly, 12% interest rate on top of that is unfair. Quite frankly, if people made mistakes because of due to not being intentional, and then we criminalize them, we put burdens on them, they're trying to make their best to meet their basic needs. So what this bill does is to ensure that we have a fair system in the unemployment system, especially for those who are low income in service industry and many other industries who are the recipients of this benefit. So, Mr. Chair and members, I know we will be making some little bit of a change of the direction of where the bill is going, but I wanted to give the department the opportunity to give us a guidance. What is fair in that process? How can we resolve this issue that has been a burden to many Minnesotans? And I think this is the moment that we look into that and solve some of those problems. We set aside a specific special revenue account that we're collecting money from these penalties and interest and accruing. So it's sitting in the account instead of making sure that we give back to those who really deserve that funding. So I ask for your support, and hopefully we can make any adjustments and work with the department to make sure that we have clear guidance in how to move forward.
Thank you, Chair Nor. Members, I just want to make a correction. This bill is going to be referred to the Ways and Means Committee and not the General Register. And so I will renew my motion that House File 784, as amended, be referred to the Ways and Means Committee. All those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion prevails. Then the bill is on its way to Ways and Means Committee. Is Representative Baja here?
No, but we didn't sound so much like cheap.
Oh, because he wants some boostos?
I can
wait. That's fine. Next is House File 1743, Chair Hassan.
Okay.
Use that tissue. Look at you.
Chair Hassan moves that House File 1743 be laid over for possible inclusion.
Too late. Oh, yeah. Okay. All right. I'll second. I'm sorry. I'm all over the place.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 1743 is the Minneapolis Park Board Teen Teamworks Youth Employment Funding. This program has been operating since 1986, which has provided quality employment, education, and training programs for over 8,000 economically disadvantaged youth between the ages of 14 through 24. This program has received deed funding, direct appropriations, as well as competitive grant in the past 30 years. We know, you know, summer is really problematic for youth that don't have anything to do. Last summer, my city of Minneapolis had a lot of issues with young people who had nothing to do. And it got to a point where downtown was a no-go zone because there were too many young people who had nothing to do. So that's one of the reasons why when I saw this bill that I jumped on and I called in Minneapolis Park Board to my office and I'm like, how can we, impact more youth? With the current funding that they had, they were serving only 30 youth. And the deed funding of $175,000, they were funding 30 youth. And I also want to say that this program is also funded through the Park Board's their own money. It's not only funding from deed. So when I met with the superintendent and I told him that I really want to reach more youth this summer, so then we don't have young people who don't have anything to do. Their parents are not rich enough to send them, you know, all paid, all expenses paid, summer vacation or summer camp, and they don't have a job or a training program that keeps them occupied. They brought me this bill, and it's increased funding. And so the increased funding will reach up to 300 young people. With that, Mr. Chair, I have a testifier here with me who will just explain more in details of what this program does and why we need the increased funding. Thank you.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Good morning. My name is Mary Lynn Pulcher, and I'm the manager for Environmental Education and Youth Employment for the Minneapolis Park and Recreation Board. And I'm here just to talk a little bit more about the youth employment that we provide. We're specifically looking for more funding so we can serve more youth. The youth employment and training programs that we have been running for the last 30 years, normally it's a very intensive program over the course of the summer. Last summer we employed 198 youth. They work for 9 or 10 weeks. They work in crews or they have individual placements. We really work very strongly with North Minneapolis and South Central Minneapolis in terms of our recruiting. The teens that we hire are majority communities of color and they're economically disadvantaged. Out of the 198 youth that we had last year, I think it was 175 were communities of color. We have the ability to tire teenagers out. You are working 28 hours a week, Monday through Thursday, from 7:30 in the morning till 3 p.m. As part of your work day, you're with an adult mentor who looks like you. The majority of our site supervisors are African-American men, and African-Americans are the majority of the youth that we serve. In addition to the learning job readiness skills, working out in the field, learning things more about like operating in a park, becoming a park keeper, a gardener, getting exposure to being an arborist. Even our planning department is involved in this effort, so youth have exposure to careers they never knew were around in terms of like landscape architecture, engineers, working with stormwater, BMPs, really exposing kids to what's possible in the future. They also have one day a week where they're doing a more like earn to learn, and so they're engaged in things like financial management, learning how to use the new cards that you get when you get paid instead of a check, but they learn about a checking account and taking care of cash and having being a good steward of your money and that kind of thing. It's also things of like, there's just such a long list. But anyway, but doing de-escalation training, working as a team, for a lot of youth, this is their first job. So the majority of youth are 14 and 15. And then one of the other things that we do with the youth that we serve is also trying them get them connected to the programming that we have in the recreation center. So it's this awesome opportunity to say, you work during the day, go home, get supper, come back, and then you can be on a sports team or you can be in some of our programming that is specific for teenagers in the evening. So we do try and keep them busy. And it is, again, a system where we are trying to grow our own replacements. We're within the park system itself to get more youth to come back again and again and to continue to increase their skill set. So we have reimagined the program from where it's been, and our superintendent's very keen to make sure that we are really growing our own youth. We have, I can point to many people in the park system who started out at age 14, 15 in Teen Teamworks, and now you're an operations manager, you're working in customer service, you're park keepers, you're crew leaders, gardeners, but we have definitely had success in terms of raising kids up and finding full-time work. And I can take more questions, but I'd like to have Mary Yang come up and speak about her experience as someone who's a really great model of starting as a teenager and now has a full-time job.
Thank you, Ms. Poster. Ms. Yang, please proceed to the testifying podium, identify yourself for the record, and proceed.
Good morning. Thank you for having me. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Mary Yang, and I am the community outreach specialist at the Mississippi Watershed Management Organization. I am here on behalf of the MWMO and the Minneapolis Park and Recreation Board today to testify in support of House File 1743. My experience as a participant in youth employment programming at the Minneapolis Park and Recreation Board had a positive, lasting impact on my life and led directly to my career. Starting at 15, I was part of the youth employment program called the Mississippi River Green Team. It is a two-year program run by the Minneapolis Park and Recreation Board and the MWMO that has changed my life and continue to fuel my passion for working in conservation. My time on the Green Team provided me with a mentor job experience from which I gained valuable knowledge and skills. Working on the Green Team involves things like maintaining rain gardens, learning plant identification skills, and practicing weed control. This program taught me not only field skills, but also interpersonal skills, such as teamwork, leadership, communication, and responsibility. As part of the program, my supervisor slash mentor continued to help me throughout college. I worked for different agencies like the National Park Service, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the City of Minneapolis Public Works Department, and the Minneapolis Park and Recreation Board. I graduated from Augsburg University, where I majored in urban studies with a double minor in environmental science and sociology. My journey didn't end there. However, I am happy to report that today I am now working at the place where my journey began, as a permanent full-time staff at the MWMO. I wanted to share my story not only to encourage BIPOC youth who want to start their own journey in conservation, but to ask for your help in supporting them. By funding this youth employment bill, we could continue to educate and help BIPOC youth who are interested in conservation and help them pursue not just a dream job, but a dream career. Thank you for having me, and thank you for having me to share my story with you. I hope that you continue to support an individual like me. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Yang, for sharing your story. Discussion, Representative Samantha Centermuro.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Hassan, for bringing this bill. I think this is a really needed bill. Thank you for seeing a problem in our community and working with community partners to solve it. I just want to say that one of the reasons that I really like this opportunity for young people is, you know, I've always had issues, I think, especially in Minnesota, with the idea of summer school, because I know that there are young people that really need that extra support. And in Minnesota, I really feel like in the months of June to like August, that very short period, we should be getting young people outside as much as possible. So I really like that. The other thing I really like was, I think what Ms. Polster mentioned about the de-escalation training. You know, yesterday was National Library Day, and so in another committee we were having a talk about, you know, libraries being one of the few free spaces, right? And as a free space, you know, you sometimes get a lot of issues in the community, right? People who don't have anywhere else to go are coming to you. And I see that in Minneapolis, same thing with parks. And so I think preparing our young people to have those skills for, you know, dealing with the things that sometimes come up at our parks, I think that's really important. So thank you for this work.
Representative Baker.
Mr. Chair, thank you again, Representative, for bringing this forward. I think my question is more so of, I think what's unique about the Minneapolis Park and Rec organization is that they're funded through their taxpayers. They have a taxing levy already in the city. And so I guess when I first saw this come to us, I felt it a little bit odd. And I hadn't heard that you had gotten funding before, but I think you have through this kind of a program before. But it's a great program. And again, I agree with the outcomes, the goals. And by the way, the Sambuca was amazing. So thank you for that. It's nice and spicy. Beautiful. Thank you.
That was the idea. Sorry. Was so nobody remembers to ask me questions.
No, sorry. But I had it.
Didn't work.
Well-deserved compliment on the Sambuca. But I think it's just more of the ongoing question of, is this where we should be spending the full taxpayer resources in the state when you've got that ability to raise the tax for this program? I think it sounds like a great program. It's funded by Minneapolis city owners and property owners, and they get to enjoy the parks, and they get to enjoy the outcomes of these projects for these kids that are going to be hired. So I asked the question, is this something that is kind of unique? Because, again, we don't do a lot of this with other smaller cities when it comes to this smaller working in a park system. So just your thoughts overall, I guess, on that concept, Representative, because I do find it a little bit, you know, it's not as easy as some of the other programs that we fund here.
Sure, Son.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Rep. Baker. We are spending money, so the Park Board is willing to invest $650,000 on this program. So it's not, you know, a free slate where Minneapolis Park is not spending any money, but we need the extra help because we have a lot of young people in Minneapolis. Minneapolis is the biggest city of this state, and we have many young people. We just want to make sure that we can reach out to as many young people as possible. You know, young people who don't have the luxury of having a parent pay for their summer expenses, a rich uncle take them all paid expenses, vacation. These are people who don't have any of that and need some support. So we're not coming to the state just to say, like, give us a free check. We are spending, you know, our own money, but there's still a need for this program to be expanded, and there's more youth. So if we got the funding that we're asking for, we will be able to serve 300 young people this summer.
Representative Baker.
Just a final question. What is the total of the Minneapolis Park and Rec Board budget? What do they take in for revenues in a year? Do you know that number?
Mr. Chair and Rep. Baker, I don't, but we have people from the park, so.
I'm just curious.
Oh, sure.
Mr. Chair, I think Pamela's going to quick look that up for what revenue is. But if I may, I would just also say that Minneapolis Parks is not just neighborhood parks, it's regional parks. And those are the parks that don't just serve Minneapolis residents. So they are regional parks, which is where some of these youth work. And so that includes like Minneapolis Chain of Lakes. It includes Minnehaha Creek, Worth Park. I mean, it's all the big parks. And as regional parks, that means probably 40 to 50% of the people who come and use those parks are people who do not reside in the city of Minneapolis. And the majority of regional parks is actually funded by, you know, city of Minneapolis residents. They are the ones who are funding the majority of taking care of those regional parks that serve the greater metro area. So those youth do benefit, but the people who visit the parks isn't just Minneapolis residents. So there is a much wider range. And I would say when you, I don't know where all of you live, but I would say when you're in town and you're bringing out of town visitors, you're probably going to Lake Harriet or Minnehaha Falls or the Stone Arch Bridge. And so there are people from across the state and the Midwest and farther that come and benefit from the parks, particularly in the summer, who benefit from the youth that we have working.
Officer, if you don't have the information, can you follow up with Lee Baker?
Definitely fine. Can. Yes.
Fine. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Representative Weens.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Hassan and Ms. Kulcher. I think my question is very similar to Rep. Baker's. My understanding is that Oh, that must be my call. No, just kidding. is that this has been a long ongoing program that's been funded by Minneapolis residents, and this is the first year that there's a request for a grant from DEED to expand the program. And okay, I'll finish my question and then you can clarify for me, because the data in the handout shows about 200 youth that were in the program last year, and this appropriation would be for another 130. So if there's an existing program that has about 200 youth in it, and this would expand it to somewhere around, I guess, 300. So if you could just clarify that piece for me. Thank you.
Ms. Bolster.
Thank you, Chair and Committee. So yes, I would say for us to run a crew, just so you know, it is like 130 youth that we would do through this program. It takes about $50,000 per crew when you put in the site supervisor, the teens themselves who are working, and then there's the people who are above them who are coordinating all of the locations that they work and all the work that comes with it. So it is like another 100 youth who would participate in this. And I will say that will be a little fluid, because one of my goals is to have more teenagers who are older come back, so work more with like 18, 19-year-olds as well, and hopefully we can pay them a little bit higher wage, which is also one of the goals here that's listed on the back, is to pay the site supervisors additional funds as well as a little bit older, so they've got closer to a living wage and can pay more rent. So, and we have come to DEED. We've gotten DEED grants in a competitive means, but we actually used to get a direct appropriation every year for the program. I think the last one was maybe 8 years ago, 10 years ago. So the Park Board has stepped up to fill that in and put more of its own taxpayer dollars into it. And again, this is to increase the number of youth, and I view this as this opportunity to really dig into those older youth and work with them as well. So,
Representative Weems.
No, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Son and Ms. Bolscher.
Closing statements. Chair Hassan.
Oh, sorry. Don't know where I'm based off. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is a great program, and I ask for your support.
Go ahead, Chair Hassan.
She did.
Okay.
I did.
Well, all right. I'm sorry. I was. Okay, Chair Hassan renews her motion. The House File 1743 be later award for possible inclusion. Next is. Oh, Representative Fajer, you're here. I'll move the House File 1055 be later award for possible inclusion. Representative Bajay, welcome to committee. Please explain your bill and introduce your testifiers.
Thank you, Chair Zhang and members of the committee. I'm sorry I did not bring Sambusas with me, but maybe next time. So I'm here to present House File 1055. This bill would appropriate $400,000 to HIRED to expand their Career Pathways program. HIRED is a workforce development nonprofit that seeks to connect job seekers to employers all across the Twin Cities. HIRED has been a source of hope for people seeking to increase their skills and become an asset in the workforce. As you'll note in the handout, HIRED has a track record of training women, people of color, and young adults. Many of them are low income, but through HIRED's help can qualify for family-sustaining jobs. HIRED works closely with employers to create curriculums and then train potential employees to meet workforce needs. This is a crucial investment for both workers and employers. HIRED provides an opportunity for people to contribute to our economy and provide them with an opportunity to support their families and communities. And so with that, I'll turn it over to my testifiers who can further describe the importance of HIRED in the community.
Welcome to the committee, Ms. Brecky. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Good morning. My name is Julie Brecky, and I'm really thankful to be here. Thank you, Representative Agbaje and Chair Zhang and members of the committee. As I said, my name is Julie Brecky. I'm the executive director at HIRED. And I am really thankful to be here today. As you may know, and as Representative Agbaje mentioned, we are a multi-service workforce development nonprofit. We focus on one thing. We really work to help people prepare for and secure good jobs. What we mean by a good job is a family-sustaining wage, medical benefits, and the opportunity for advancement, and actually to build, realize dreams and build wealth. HIRED works with people from across the Twin Cities, and we support individuals whose employment opportunities have been shaped by historic and systemic inequities, We build trusting relationships one person at a time, and I'm proud to say that last year we worked with over 5,200 individuals across the Twin Cities. And in this dynamic workforce environment, Hired helped 1,524 individuals find a job last year. With an average wage of more than $23 an hour, which calculates out to about $47,000 a year. One of our most collaborative and impactful programs is our Career Pathway Program, and Hired currently offers our trainings in this area for medical call center, office admin, and medical manufacturing. We work with employer partners who are really struggling to find qualified workers for entry-level and gateway-level jobs, and we're a big part of that solution. I'm happy to say that our employer partners are engaged throughout the training in a variety of roles, including co-creating curriculum, guaranteeing job interviews at the end of graduation, and many points in between. We have some amazing employer partners, UROC, Medica, CVS, Allina, Medtronic, Ramsey County, a huge range of employers that really collaborate with us in these career pathway programs. Last year, of the 143 people trained through our career pathway programs, I had a little bit of statistics here. 81% identified as BIPOC. We serve a majority black and brown community that would identify themselves as low income. 78% of those 143 individuals earned an industry recognized credential, and 92% gained employment. The average wage for this group and in this program, Career Pathways, is between $16 and $24 an hour. And the reason we're here today is that we know we can do more. We can be an even bigger part of closing the worker shortage and closing wage disparities in the state of Minnesota. A $400,000 direct appropriation will help Hired expand our capacity to hold more classes, train more job seekers, and connect more people to good jobs. We have a strong track record of securing DEED competitive grants and meeting our goals. And we're asking for a direct appropriation because we will be able to offer more trainings and connect more people to employment with family-sustaining wages. I'm excited to, actually delighted, to introduce one of our graduates. Jennifer Chang has stepped away from work today to be here to tell her story. She graduated from our office admin program, and I'm really excited for her to share her story with you today.
Thank you, Ms. Brecky. Ms. Chang, please proceed to the testifying table, identify yourself for the record, and proceed.
So my name is Jennifer Chang. Thank you, Chair Zhang, and members of the committee. As you know, my name is Jennifer. I graduated from Hired's Administrative Assistant Program in March 2019. Here is a little background of my story of how I ended up with Hired. In 2017, after losing my father-in-law, I moved my family back from Minnesota, from California. Nothing with our move was going as planned, so my husband was working two jobs while we were living in our van. And trying to find a stable housing while homeless, I found out I was expecting our sixth child. When we finally were able to get a place, I vowed to never let my kids go through this again. In the end of 2018, I was working at Sam's Club part-time, but it was a bad situation. I knew I needed to make a change. I learned about the 7-week admin assistant training at Hired, and I was skeptical because I had taken a 9-month training at Everest, but wasn't able to get a job after graduating. I thought Hired's training could be different, so I enrolled to start the January class. My job at Sam's was not flexible, and I either had to quit or take the training or keep my position. And although it was financially difficult, I did quit my job so I can take the training to actually start my career. After I quit my job, my spouse became ill. He had always been the breadwinner of the family, but he had to stop working as his illness was progressing. A lot was happening in my family. I found out I was adding another child to our family. And in the early stages of pregnancy, when I started the class at Hired, I was afraid that I would give up, but instead I took a leap of faith. Near the end of my training, my trainer, Don, placed me at a job shadowing role at Ramsey County Human Resources. I was nervous, but I had taken that leap of faith and didn't want to stop. After my job shadowing experience, I was offered a temporary position with Ramsey County. That July, I accepted a full-time role with the county. I was happy and relieved. I cried because I knew that my family was going to be financially stable. I am a proud graduate of Hired, an employee with Ramsey County. I am proud of my position and the colleagues I work alongside with. I have great leaders who are letting me lead in my journey. My boss is the best. She sees the value of me and my work. She has never let me down and has always admired my work. I am someone who has never had any administrative experience before this class. But with this training, I have been able to prosper. This March, it will be my fourth year with Ramsey County. I am proud of what I had accomplished these past 4 years, and I like knowing that I am now creating a good life for my family, but also showing my kids that they can achieve great things for their lives. I also refer a lot of people to Hired's training job program, and I am also invited into classes to speak about my experience and my career. I've also been able to help 3 admin graduates from Hired with permanent positions at Ramsey County. Thank you for considering this bill by funding Hired to offer more career pathway classes. You are providing great opportunities for people like me.
Thank you, Ms. Chang, for sharing your story. Discussion, Representative Baker.
Mr. Chair, and maybe this is to Ms. Brecky, if you could return to the table. This is, again, a good idea. I really do like. A couple questions would be the partners that you had mentioned, some of your corporate partners and such that are hiring and helping, have they also financially supported the organization, or are they more just really the sort of the support network to get people hired? But tell me, are they helping financially at this point?
Ms. Brecky.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative. You know, it really depends on the employer, to be quite frank. I'll give you an example of Medtronic right now. We're working with them on 2 different phases. One is helping them fill manufacturing roles, assembler roles, really. But then we also have another project that we're working on with them where we're working on job retention, really to minimize turnover and talk about pathways within Medtronic. In that instance, in one of our funding proposals, they're actually identifying all their in-kind resources that they're dedicating to it. So not necessarily cash in that situation, but over $100,000 of their own staff time to co-create and work on both the training side of it and the retention side of it. We definitely work with corporations that do support the organization, more with general operating funds and not necessarily directly for career pathway. But I think we're actually talking as an organization that we need to try and up the game there to get a little skin in the game from our corporate partners as well. I have to say they do invest a lot of time and energy and create all sorts of opportunities for the people that we're working with. And frankly, we could not run the career pathway programs the way we do. Our promise is if we're co-creating curriculum and they're telling us what skills they need for a prepared worker, we can embed that instruction and those skills in the job. And a guaranteed job interview is amazing. Very often, some of the people that we're working with don't look great on paper, but once people have a chance to job shadow and really get to know someone, such as Jennifer, who is amazing, they really see the potential and get excited about it. So it really is a terrific pathway for people who probably wouldn't know those jobs existed or wouldn't have the access without this kind of an introduction.
Representative Baker.
And that's, Mr. Chair, great answer. I know the in-kind dollars are real, and it's very helpful for them. Some of your partners you've mentioned are stellar employers. And the other thing that I think we have as employers, and I'm one of them, and I think employers who don't have the experience like I do with substance use disorder and understanding the challenges with employees in training, and you probably see some of this, that folks that are either in recovery, they might be trying to get out of their active use. I mean, it's not easy. And I think employers need more training to understand how do we best work with these folks. There's nothing better in someone in recovery is to have a good, stable job, but better yet is to have an understanding employer and a supervisor that gets it. And I hope that your team with Hired and your folks can help us expand that in all of Minnesota. I think these are things that as employers, again, we need to do a better job with understanding this workforce that does come with some baggage. They might have to have some time off for a court appearance. They might be a little late for work sometimes, but they're struggling. They're getting back into it. So I just hope that your programs, like others, can help us do that as well, and I hope those employers appreciate what we're trying to do, because you're giving them the most valuable asset right now, and that's a good worker. Yeah. And so appreciate your ability to do this and want to keep expanding that conversation, so thank you.
Thank you, Representative. And Chair, if I could add one thing, we were trying to keep our testimony here very concise, but you bring up a really great point. I describe hired as a job, a place where you can get a job and a whole lot more, because we're working with support services and working on housing stability, food security, transportation, child care, a huge range of issues. We partner with mental health partners and chemical dependency folks, and we're really surrounding people with holistic support services so that they can actually focus on job training, getting a job and keeping that job. And advocacy with the employers and really helping people understand. First of all, employees understanding workplace expectations is a huge part of our work. But then also really staying connected with people. I mean, Jennifer graduated 4 years ago. She's here today because this was a life-changing program for her. And if she needs help from hired, she knows she can contact her staff person for just navigating a difficult situation or networking or advancement, all those different things. So I really appreciate your time today and you raising that point.
Representative Senator Muro.
Thank you. And my question is actually for Jennifer Chang. So I don't know if you can come back up.
Ms. Chang?
I'm sorry. I just wanted to thank you for telling your story, and you know, I think Ramsey County is lucky to have you as an employee. You just mentioned that you had participated in other training programs,
yes,
and you
I
felt
have.
Like hired was more helpful, and so I'm just wondering if you can speak to that a little bit more.
So I graduated from Everest back in 2009, right after I had my second daughter. My at that time, I think there was like the big layoff, and my husband ended up being laid off. He was one of them that was laid off that year in 2008. Well, I think they cut his position off, so he ended up being cut off, and so I took this nine-month program. So I do have a pharmacy technician program from that school. So I was there about 9 months. I graduated, so it took a very long time for me to get certified and get up into a position, but I couldn't really get certified because I didn't have the experience, so nobody was really hiring me at that time. So it was really hard, but thank God my husband was able to go back to work, so he provided for 10 years while I was just stay-at-home mom, and I just worked here and there, and then we took a big toll after I ended up getting laid off in 2016. So we decided to make that big leap and move out of Minnesota. So that was probably the worst decision that we made. But then coming back, I realized a lot that needed to be changed. So one was my career. And so, like I said, I landed. I love going to work every day. You know, a lot of people, when you go to a job and you have managers that don't value your work, you don't really want to be there. And so, I'm sorry. I'm lucky to be blessed to have great leaders from Ramsey County. So. Thank you.
Representative Senator Muro.
Thank you. Yeah. Sorry for being emotional.
Oh. Further discussions? All right. I will renew that. House file 1055 be laid over for possible inclusion. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't give you a chance to close.
Oh.
Closing statement.
Thank you, Chair. I think the testifiers really wrapped it up, so I ask for the committee's support and consideration. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Badger. I'll renew my motion that House file 1055 be laid over for possible inclusion. The next bill is House file 1081, Representative Senator Muro. And Representative Senator Muro will move that House File 1081 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Representative Senator Muro, to your bill.
Yes, thank you. Good morning, Chair. Good morning, Committee. Happy to be in front of you today presenting House File 1081. This bill is an appropriation for workforce development to supply youth with job skills and career development through the Minnesota Alliance of Boys and Girls Clubs. This is a statewide project. There are Boys and Girls Clubs all across the state in many of our districts. I'm happy to say that this is a bipartisan bill because I think many of us, you know, regardless of party lines, know the role that Boys and Girls Clubs play in our community. You know, I think first and foremost, Boys and Girls Clubs are safe space for young people. They're safe space built for young people. And one of the things that I really like about the approach to workforce development that the Boys and Girls Clubs take is that they, you know, they build really long and lasting relationships with youth. They are really embedded in the community. I know that very close to my district, in the Little Earth community in South Minneapolis, the Boys and Girls Clubs is this a stable thing in a community that is sometimes very unstable. And so they are doing really exciting work relating to career development, including, you know, thinking about ways to even reach more youth statewide that might not be able to come into a Boys and Girls Clubs through some really interesting things relating to kind of like virtual reality job training that they can share more about. I know that they had considered bringing some of their virtual reality like equipment today, but weren't sure that we were going to have time. But I'm excited for them to tell you more, and I will turn it over to my testifiers. First, we have Brian Donaldson, who's the executive director of the Minnesota Alliance of Boys and Girls Clubs.
Welcome to committee, Mr. Donaldson. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Brian Donaldson. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Alliance of Boys and Girls Clubs. I want to first thank Representative Sensenmura for supporting us in this bill and your prior support of Boys and Girls Club before coming to the Capitol, and I want to thank this committee for their ongoing support of Boys and Girls Clubs over the years. Minnesota Alliance of Boys and Girls Clubs is a collaboration of 12 independent Boys and Girls Club organizations across the state. Boys and Girls Clubs in Minnesota provide after-school and summer programming for children and teens, emphasizing academic success, healthy lifestyles, and good character and citizenship. We serve 25,000 young people in 33 communities across the state, providing a safe and positive environment for children to learn, grow, and succeed. Youth pay little to nothing to attend a Boys and Girls Club every year. The Minnesota Boys and Girls Club have partnered with the legislature, indeed over the last 13 years, to bring comprehensive workforce training and development to club youth in many communities where youth would not otherwise have the opportunity to gain those skills. Programs in soft skill development, career exploration, applying and interviewing, as well as money management and goal setting, have helped prepare Minnesota's youth at Boys and Girls Club for their great futures the minute they graduate high school. Last year in Minnesota, 67% of youth at clubs had work experience, and 94% of our youth reported that they felt that they were prepared to enter the workforce. House File 1081 would once again provide matching funds to clubs across the state to help prepare youth for their great futures. Additionally, this bill would allow clubs, especially in greater Minnesota, to invest in a virtual reality job training and exploration system that would bring them opportunities that they could not have been able to access before. And while we didn't bring the VR headsets with us today, we're going to be back here on March 16th in the House, and we invite you to come take a look at it and maybe get certified on airplane mechanics or manufacturing of a car. So, to tell you more about the club's work in the community and especially in our North Minneapolis Jerry Gamble Clubs is C.J. Jackson. She's the branch director of the Boys and Girls Clubs Jerry Gamble Club.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Peace. My name is C.J. Jackson. Thank you guys for having me here this morning to talk about the club. Two clubs that I'm going to talk about, Mr. Chair, will be Career Launch and Money Matters, which are very critical programs for kids in our community. And we start those very young, right away, you know, letting the kids know the opportunities that they have and really trying to, like, expand their mind on the possibilities that they can have that they don't foresee for themselves. I had a fourth grader who was really just interested in really basketball, and she felt like she didn't have merchandise that was available to her in her community that she could sell and wear. And one of the things that we were able to do was help this young person create an LLC. So she has her own brand. She's one of 12 in the household, and it was great for the young lady, 12 siblings that is, and then the parents are there too. It was great for her and her, you know, just elevation and self-confidence, and for her to be able to see, like, at fourth grade that she could become her own business owner. But when the parents came to testify, like, how much that helped their own household economically and helped them, you know, think about being interested in becoming business owners themselves. They were able to start their own lawn care business, and it really just opened up, like, for the rest of their kids to really just be interested in starting their own businesses too. So we like to start that, like, nice and early, and it can be little as, you know, starting and doing things like around the club. asking the young people, what are they interested in? And just tapping into it. And, you know, they just talk about their interests, and we figure out a way to tap into it to elevate, to help them maximize their potential. And that also connects with money matters. You know, financial literacy is something that's very lacking, especially with the kids in our community. A lot of kids, you know, end up graduating high school and don't have financial literacy as well. And so being able to provide those opportunities in the club for the young people helps them get an understanding of checking and savings accounts. How do you become an investor in things of that nature? It's really helpful because we have a lot of people who come in and explain that to the young people, create workshops. They get to go down, and they're very interactive, keep the young people like very engaged, and it just fuels their mind and opens up the opportunity for them to understand that the possibilities can be endless for them. You know, it is very meaningful for them to be able to get these experiences at the clubs. We have a lot of children and families who they have a whole sibling set who's there, so you can see them pass that down and share that wealth with one another, as well as their parents and caregivers. So, you know, we really appreciate the support that we've been getting for you guys, and hope that that can continue. Thank you.
Thank you guys for your testimony.
I think we have, do we have one more testifier?
Thank you. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for having me today to testify on behalf of the Boys and Girls Club. My name is Lamar Ability, and I am an alumni of the Boys and Girls Club of the Twin Cities. I'm also an immigrant from Liberia. Coming to America at a young age, you have a hard time assimilating into the culture. You always kind of look for that community, a place where you feel like you can belong. So along with learning the new language, you also got to learn a new culture, a new system, a new way of living life, right? I was fortunate to grow up in a neighborhood, Marnary, right behind the Capitol right here, right next to Regents Hospital. And growing up in the projects, you really don't have much opportunities. As she mentioned earlier, a lot of myself and my peers would be outside with nothing to do, right? And I think the Boys and Girls Club really fulfilled that void in our lives, and I attended the Boys and Girls Club. And I, again, when I started going to the Boys and Girls Club, I wasn't a stellar student at all. I was one of the youth that caused a lot of trouble. I was getting in trouble in school. But the thing is that the Boys and Girls Club staff never gave up on me, always provided the resources, mentorship, and opportunities for me to grow as an individual, and then also as a more of a productive citizen in this world, right? I was able to get my first job, like in high school, my freshman year of high school. Got my first job literally right here at White Castle. I was able to help my family pay rent at the time, and that was all thanks to the Boys and Girls Club. At the time, I didn't even know I was going to graduate high school. The Boys and Girls Club worked with me. I participated in all the program, Money Matter, Career Launch, and various other programs that was able to put me on the right track to life, right? I ended up, as a kid, not knowing you was going to even graduate high school, I ended up graduating high school, went off to college, and graduated college with 2 degrees. And at the same time, the Boys and Girls Club really sparked a lot of passion and a lot of drive within me, and then also some of the peers that I grew up with. I ended up co-founding a reusable water bottle company with another club alumni as well. We started the company within the Boys and Girls Club in summer of 2020 in the midst of the global pandemic and the George Floyd murder that happened in our state. A friend of mine that I grew up with in Marnary and I've known for 13 years now, we started a business. We've been running it since 2020. And as a reusable water bottle company, the Boys and Girls Club really taught us the impact of having a purpose and a passion for something and then helping people along the way. So with our company, we really tried to implement that. Our goal was to, hey, how can we help people? With our bottle, myself and my co-founder, we both went through the water crisis growing up in Africa. And what we wanted to do was, hey, people are going to buy reusable water bottles anyway. how could we utilize that to impact other people's lives that are experiencing the water crisis? So every time somebody buy one of our bottles, we donate 50% of the profits to help provide up to 10 years of clean, safe water to a person in need. And since launching in 2020, we have been able to provide 50,000 people clean, safe water. And that, to me, very surreal. Imagine a kid that didn't know English at all, just coming here, didn't know he was going to graduate high school, go off to college, and so on and so forth, right? And with along with that, I've been able to get a lot of success from with my business and a lot of mentorship with the people and the tie that I still have to Boys and Girls Club, helping me every step of the way. And today, I was like, I want to return the favor to the Boys and Girls Club. I am also working with the Boys and Girls Club. I'm their club alumni coordinator right now, because I realized the impact the Boys and Girls Club have on our lives, right? I had a lot of peers that I went through the Boys and Girls Club with. So growing up in our projects here, you grew up with a lot of peers. I had 30-plus young men that looked just like me. We all went through similar life experiences. And today, as alumni coordinator, my goal is to bring everybody back into the fold. With the Boys and Girls Club, we're really trying to build a foundation where these young people that are may have decided not to go to college or even went to college, at some time we all need a mentorship, right? So we have the board of directors now of the Boys and Girls Club helping mentor these young people as they go through their life journey. And the Boys and Girls Club recently shifted their strategic goal to having that North Star goal of making sure all young people are successful beyond high school. And that's where I really find a lot of passion. And what our goal is now is to be able to create a pipeline to the workforce with all our alumni. Because I realized I went through the workforce stuff. I learned a lot and a lot of resources. I started my own company. I was able to find some success in there. So now, with the help of the Boys and Girls Club, we are actually helping implement a lot of these things to people's lives, right? Providing resources and mentorship, bringing alumni back to the fold. A lot of our alumni here, we have doctors, software engineers. We have alumni that are working in trades, construction, in just various different areas, right? So we also have a lot of young people that may not know what they want to do. So we are able to now connect alumni to younger folks, mentor them, guide them into the right path in life, and expose them to different careers and stuff like that. And it, to me, is I find a lot of joy in that. And I, man, as I sit in front of you all today, I couldn't imagine being able to be in this position, being able to be speaking in front of you all today, and being able to be in the position that I am today without the Boys and Girls Club. And I really hope that this bill is able to pass, because it's going to help a lot of people. And that's an understatement at that, because if you guys, behind every number that was mentioned, there's real-life people and real-life stories to all those numbers, and it's going to impact every single one of those kids and their families.
Thank you. Discussion, Representative Chair Becker Flynn.
Thank you, Chair Zhang, and thank you to Representative Spencer Murrah and the testifiers today. One thing I did want to point out, so I don't know if folks looked at this list on the handout of the club locations. So if you're like me and you grew up on the res, you are noticing that a lot of those cities are actually cities and towns that are located near or on our reservations in northern Minnesota. And so I just wanted to lift up, and then I see 23% of those served are Native kids. And I just want to lift up how important these programs are as established programs in rural northern Minnesota that benefit our tribal communities as well as the surrounding community. So I just really wanted to lift that up, because I think the Boys and Girls Club, I know I remember when the one opened in Cass Lake in my hometown, and they're trusted, established. You know, this is exactly the kind of thing that we need to keep continuing to support in our communities. And so I know usually the folks who testify live closer to the cities. And so just wanted to lift up that there is a lot of good work being done by Boys and Girls Club for our tribal communities and rural communities, especially. So thank you. Oh, and also I want to know the name of your water bottle company.
Yes. Mr. Chair, I can speak?
Go ahead.
Thank you. So the name of my company is called Didomi. The thing is, we really try to make it human-centered and apply that value that the Boys and Girls Club really installed in us into our brand, right? So the name Didomi is actually a biblical Greek word that means to give, because we're helping people give back to others in need, right? And if you are able to look it up, didomibottle.com. Peep our logo, I'll give you a little sneak peek. Our logo is actually a cross finger symbolizing hope. And then if you look inside of there, there's a drop of water because we believe that every single person that join us on our movement to help combat the water crisis is a drop of change, right? We are all a drop of change that can create a massive ripple in the world and be able to alleviate and help people that are going through the water crisis.
Representative Hemmingsen-Yeager.
Thank you, Chair. And just kind of a moment of reflection. So I also sit on the Children and Families Committee, and kind of what this has highlighted, excuse me, and what Representative Hassan's, I think, bill highlighted too, is like our investment in kids, our investment in teenagers. I think it's been pretty well highlighted that when kids don't have anything to do, they get into trouble. Mm-hmm. And when we can give them opportunities to get involved in the community, you know, when you said it sparks a passion and it sparks direction and it sparks like a purpose, mm-hmm. you know, that sets up these kids for success. And it also decreases crime. So I just think if we invest in our kids on so many levels, our whole society benefits. So I just want to say thank you to everybody for coming in today.
Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, just along that line, like even to this day in my personal life, I live two different lives, right? But you wake up in the morning, you go do your day job, and then you go back home to the folks that you grew up with, folks you've known for a long time. And to this day, you have a lot of people that may not have been interested in education, that didn't have that passion or purpose to really try to amount to different things in life. They get to a different stage where they want to change their lives, right? You have a lot of young people today, 21, 22, that I come in contact with because of my position with the Boys and Girls Club, that are coming to me, hey, how can I get a job here? How can I prepare myself, build that resume, learn how to email, learn how to network with folks and get to where we need to be? So there's a lot of people that are really have that passion burning inside them, but with no opportunity. So with the Boys and Girls Club, Boys and Girls Club is a place where opportunity meets passion. Yeah, thank you.
Closing statement, Representative Intermira.
I think that my testifier said it best. Boys and Girls Club is a place where opportunity meets passion. So I hope that we can consider this bill for inclusion in the omnibus.
Representative Samira renews her motion. The House File 1081 be later for possible inclusion. Members, just a reminder that our next hearing is this Friday, March 3rd, 8:30 a.m. in room 200. I'm sorry you got to be here early, Lead Baker, but we got a lot of business to finish. That's it. Committee is adjourned.